Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Great to go to Pittsburgh now and be joined by Chris Mack. Chris, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing great. I will stay away from the Pirates because I want to keep this positive.
Good idea.
Brutal. I mean, really, they're brutal. All right, Omar Khan, no surprise. I think I made the comment the other day, the leader in the clubhouse. Chris, give everyone an idea about how this guy has paid his dues to get to this point.
Omar Khan is, for lack of a better way to put it, a Steelers lifer, and that's meant as a compliment. Other than a year or two, I want to say, interning with the Saints in his hometown, New Orleans, about 20 years ago, his entire football career has been spent in the Pittsburgh Steelers front office. He is the guy that made it cap manageable for them to put together a roster around Ben Roethlisberger's ever-increasing salary throughout the last decade and a half. He's the man who's helped construct the T.J. Watt contract extension, who will help construct the Minkah Fitzpatrick contract extension, the guy who helped keep what was then a sane Antonio Brown in Pittsburgh as long as they did with the financial commitment they gave him at the time. This guy was Kevin Colbert's capologist, and he's going to go forward being Andy Weidel's capologist, as it sounds like Andy Weidel, VP of player personnel down in Philly, is most likely going to be hired as the assistant GM. I shouldn't say most likely. It's going to happen. It just hasn't been officially reported yet. So Andy's going to be the football guy, much like Kevin was the football guy. Andy, very similar to Kevin, a Pittsburgh guy who went off and, you know, cut his teeth in another place. Kevin Colbert did it in Detroit, Andy in Baltimore and Philly, and is now coming home to work for the hometown Steelers, and he'll be the football guy while Omar helps run the financials. And then, you know, the one part of this that shouldn't be lost on anybody is that, you know, the ever-increasing role of Mike Tomlin, a guy who's going into his 16th year in the league, and, you know, when he first started was probably just an old X's and O's ball coach, but has increasingly become that CEO type who wants to know what the ingredients are going to be in his soup, and is definitely helping make some of those big decisions on personnel matters.
Yeah, I give Andy White a lot of credit. He actually thought Justin Jefferson was better than Jalen Reagor. So he did. He got overruled.
That's going to be a huge difference, I think, for Andy. And, you know, I've talked to some people that are close to what that situation was like out in Philly. And, you know, Howie Roseman, love him or hate him, doesn't sound like a peach to work for all the time. So this is going to be very different for Andy. I don't know. You know, Andy gets a reputation as a guy who believes in the players that he has seen, to the point that, you know, as you're talking, you give a great example, the Reagor-Jefferson debate that raged on in that war room on that draft day. And, you know, Andy wanted his guy and was willing to go to bat for his guy. He very often is. And I don't know if it's going to be nearly as combative in the Steelers front office. Right. Not to say that they won't have disagreements, right, but,
sure,
you know, it's a very collaborative atmosphere down on the South Side, and it has been for a long time. You know, Kevin Colbert doesn't make any decisions in a vacuum without input, like I said, from Mike Tomlin, Omar Khan, Brandon Hunt, who, you know, we can get to, will probably be on his way out of Pittsburgh now with the addition of Andy. But yeah, it's going to be a very different working atmosphere for Andy, who, you know, has a very good relationship with Omar already, from what I understand, you know, going back to when Andy was working here in the scouting department years ago.
Brandon Hunt, the impression I got, and you can tell me if I'm wrong about this, is they didn't think he was quite experienced enough yet for this position. Is that accurate?
I don't know if it's that, Steve, or if it's... I've been told by some people that Brandon doesn't necessarily interview well. I don't know how to interpret that other than, and this is just my interpretation, we've all been in a situation where we expect to get a job, or we know somebody who's been in a situation where, they had done enough time at a place and were familiar with everyone enough and had been, you know, gaining increasingly growing responsibilities. And they thought, well, the next logical progression is I'm going to get that promotion that I've really always wanted. And then they go into the interview, and maybe they're not quite as prepared as some of the other people because they thought it was just going to be a sit with the boss and shoot the mess kind of session. And that's, again, I don't have any inside information. I don't know if that's why Brandon was sort of leapfrogged by Andy in this process or not. But when you hear somebody say that Brandon, who by all accounts is well-respected, a ton of people in the organization like him and the job that he's done in building the roster, helping build the roster here, hasn't really even had his future addressed with the team yet. That tells you, I think, that, you know, for me, the only way that computes is if something went sideways in the interview process.
All right. I believe it was on your show that Doug Whaley made his comments about Jack.
Yes, it was. Okay. To which, now, if you were watching the video stream of our show, you saw the indignation on my face.
Yes, I did. Now, I'd like to point out that by all indications, you know, Doug, who's an Upper St. Clair guy, is very well liked by a lot of people.
Okay? He is.
This isn't personal with me at all. It really isn't. It's just comical that it's my broadcast working partner who's in, like, every Hall of Fame on the planet. It's okay. All right. This is the – and I mentioned this earlier. This is the part that's struck me. Look, you and I both know that today's athlete is bigger, stronger, faster. I mean, every sport right now, because of off-season training, is right – has better athletes now than it ever has. I think that's fair, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. This is what struck me about that. When I'm looking for a difference maker in a player, regardless of sport, okay, they're all close. So let's use a football example. He runs a 4.42. He runs a 4.46. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if you hold your hand about 4 inches apart, that's how close it is. I want to now know of the two of them which one knows how to play. And when he made the comments about Jack, that told me he doesn't know how to look for guys who know how to play. He only knows about measurables.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think Doug's comments were born more out of the idea that you wouldn't be able to take a player. We were comparing eras to his defense because we had just got done talking about, you know, Mel Blunt, I think, right before that, or in that same conversation. I don't know how we got going down that path, but Doug's point was, I think, if I can speak for him a little bit, you know, guys who played in the 70s wouldn't be able to play in this day and age, or at least guys of a certain size wouldn't be able to play the same position. And that's the way I told him. Like, I think Jack, just based on his size, his athleticism, and his football IQ that you just mentioned, and Jack actually mentioned this on our station late last week, would be a great, like, weak side linebacker, hybrid safety, like the guys that are uber popular in football today, an oversized strong safety almost, right?
Yeah, because Jack played at 228. Whaley had his weight wrong, so.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I still think he'd be a Pro Bowler, an All Pro at that position if you pick Jack Ham up from 1970s Jack Ham and you drop him in 2022, give him today's nutrition and advanced athletic equipment. My God, yeah, Jack would still be at the very least a perennial All Pro. To just be at a different position. I think, you know, Doug is very good at. You may remember we had a conversation about LSU and USC and Mike Tomlin probably about 6 months ago. So Doug's very good at giving a for instance or an example, and in the way he phrases it, people latch onto it, and very quickly it's a hot button topic. So we thank him for that every Wednesday.
Right,
when he's on our show.
He did, but because the reaction, I watched the video. The two of you are like, "What the hell?"
Well, especially for me. And Doug, look, a lot of people made this accusation. It had nothing to do with the fact that Doug's a Pitt guy.
Right? No,
as a Penn State guy, I mean, my brain melted a little bit faster when he said that. Hell, right. Jack could play today at his size. He might not have the same moves and the same quicks that he once had, but football smarts and size. I don't want to run.
Come on, he's 72 now, Chris. Guy. He's 72 now. He couldn't play today. No,
sure he could.
Actually, he could. It's interesting. You know, we talk about his weight. He played at 228, 229, somewhere right around there. He's about 10 to 12 pounds less now. He is in remarkable shape.
Oh, no. I mean, when I saw you guys last fall at the what forever will be known now as the Illinois game, unfortunately, it was.
I refer to it as that thing.
Yeah. I was. You know, I hadn't seen Jack personally in years at that point, and I was still astonished at what great shape he looked to be in. So you're right.
Yeah.
Doug's very good at saying things, and like I said, phrasing them in a way that kind of stirs people up. And hey, I'm not going to complain. It gets people to watch and listen.
Oh, sure. But you know what? Again, I've never met him. I'm not even sure E.J. Manuel met him. No, I'm just kidding. I've never met
him. You had to go there, didn't you?
All right. I've never met him. I've been told by everybody that I know that he knows that he's a great guy.
He's a remarkable dude. Great guy. I mean, you don't play for Jim Render and not have some good character qualities about you.
Exactly.
You mentioned Upper St. Clair. So, yeah, no, great guy. And still a very good dude. And he told us this morning on our show, it was, you know, hours after he had found out that he wasn't going to get the GM gig.
Yeah.
He was one of the
That's
six
horrible.
Finalists. He was very humble, very kind, very congratulatory towards Omar Khan and towards Andy Weidel. Mm-hmm. And just very thankful to the Rooneys for the opportunity to even be involved in the process, because he's still got a gig with the XFL that he's still very excited about. They're involved with their player development and their football operations there as they kind of ramp up for next year.
Well, you could either work for, the Art Rooney the second, or you can work for The Rock. It's up to you.
I mean, it's not a bad pair to have to choose from, right?
It's not bad. It's not bad at all. The Pirates. No, all right. Let's just end on a positive note. All right.
Okay. to go there. You must have the game in the studio or something.
No.
Don't do it.
The Pirates are always that fallback joke. It's always great. But they retain Rust.
Mm-hmm.
They retain Rust on a 6-year deal, which you told me they were going to do. It sounds like they're still interested in retaining Malkin and Letang if they can. True?
Yeah, they do. And, it's funny. A week ago, it looked like all the writing was on the wall that Ron Hextall might be getting pushed out the side door. I think there was a little bit of a mini power play by some people that thought Hextall might not have been very interested in keeping Malkin and Letang. I don't know for sure who those people were. I do know that if Sidney Crosby were asked, he'd be very interested in retiring alongside Evgeny Malkin and Chris Letang, or at the very least, all of them finishing their careers in Penguin jerseys. So if he's being asked, then Sidney Crosby is very interested in that, and he does still carry some weight within that organization, as well he should. And so it seems to me now that Hextall has been given, I don't want to say the marching orders, but has been told by the Fenway Sports Group, the new owners of the Penguins, that, listen, we still want to compete for cups. As long as Sidney Crosby is playing like he did this year, as long as Chris Letang is healthy and playing like he did this year, we're going to try and keep the band together as long as we can. Their first line's going to come back intact with Gensel, Crosby, and now Rust. They may have to skimp a bit on some of those depth pieces. You know, the Evan Rodriguez's of the world, may not be back, or they may bring back even cheaper versions of them to fill out those bottom two lines around Jeff Carter and Teddy Bluger, because they've got the depth down the middle at center still. The big question that I think a lot of people have is, if you're going to keep Letang and Malkin, and you're willing to acknowledge that limits what you can do with your depth forwards, or the acquisition of some other depth forwards, because secondary scoring was a problem for them all year, when the first line wasn't able to produce, no one was able to produce, really, then how are you going to be able to address the other goaltending position? Tristan Jarry is going into the final year of his contract. You didn't get an opportunity to see if he had really, truly, mentally recovered from the playoff loss to the Islanders in 21. So you need to have, I think, a really strong veteran complement, or maybe not even a veteran complement, but a really strong complement, a really strong 1B to Jarry's 1A. Naturally, when that topic comes up, the topic of Marc-Andre Fleury comes up because he's a free agent, and there are rumblings he might be willing to take a quote-unquote hometown discount because he loves Pittsburgh so much and his family loves the area. I don't know, even if he takes a huge hometown discount, if once they get Letang and Malkin back on the books, they'd be able to do that. Because the give and take, the yin and the yang of any possible Malkin or Letang deals is going to be term versus average annual value. I can't imagine Ron Hextall nor anyone else in the organization is comfortable going longer than 3 or 4 years with those guys, which means you're probably going to have to pay them a higher salary. And if you do that with both of those guys, you know, if you're going 3 years, $7 million apiece for Malkin, or $6.5 million apiece, you're going 4 years and $9 million apiece for Letang, well, you've just very quickly eaten up two-thirds of your remaining cap space going into next year. And going out and shopping for a strong 1B complement to your 1A goaltender kind of goes out the window.
Absolutely. You know, the only part about the Fenway group that concerns me is they mentioned to Hextall Devers, Bogarts, and Martinez. And I'm like, no, they can't skip. it's a concern.
Hey, my friend, what? If they can play on the penalty kill, maybe.
They're all offensive guys. You and I both know it. All right, so. All right. My friend, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
No, thank you, Steve. Always enjoy joining you.